Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Here it is. Let me start with the Masters. I don't know who needs to hear this. However, winning the Masters is not supposed to be an easy thing to do. It's not supposed to be some sort of casual, chilled out April stroll through a beautifully manicured masterpiece of a golf course. No, it's not supposed to be the kind of thing you do without any kind of drama or gripping or twists or turns. It's not supposed to be something you pull off without your expression ever changing or your pulse never dancing one time the entire weekend. I mean, nobody's butthole puckered, at least not the winner. What, Alvy? No help on that?
Made your butthole pucker up.
Thank you very much. It'll make your butthole pucker up now. Not if you're Scotty Scheffler, which is why I'm so impressed with him. Like, we all know the rap on this guy. He's too dull. He's too boring. He's sleepy Scotty. And my whole thing is, right, exactly. That's why this is so incredible. Look, the fact is, not everybody's going to have a big, fat, disingenuous personality like Hefty. You can't make Scotty something he's not. And by the way, part of the reason, a big part of the reason why this dude is going to go down as arguably the best player of this generation is because he is a flatline. Because he never changes expression. Because nothing affects this dude. In other words, if you don't like this cat's vibe, or the fact that he doesn't even have one, as Mike Tyson famously said, change your station.
You have a problem, turn off your station.
My bad. Turn off your station. You have a problem, turn don't change off your station. It. Because the fact of the matter is, boring Scotty is not going anywhere. And right now, it is Scheffler and everybody else. And given that he's already got two green jackets, to me, it's not a question of if he gets another one, but how many more he gets. I can literally guarantee, if this dude does not bounce his Escalade off a tree in the middle of the night, and his wife does not take a 9 to his grill, he is going to double the green jackets he already has. He's that good. And his game and his mind are that suited for that track. And I think we all know, dude's not going to bounce his rig off any tree. His wife is not going to stick his face in the turf, tee it off, and break out the 9. See, like, he doesn't really give a damn that you're not entertained. Nor should he. Yeah, but Rome, the most interesting thing about that dude's weekend was that his wife almost had a baby and he nearly had to vacate the lead and leave to join his wife. Right. Except none of that happened. Oh, and one more thing. None of that impacted the guy at all. He didn't miss a beat. You see, the most interesting thing about this dude's weekend was that something didn't even happen. Again, this is my point. This dude just rolled right into Augusta National as the number one ranked golfer in the world, was a huge favorite to win, and then he just straight up dominated both the course and the field for the entire weekend. It's incredible. He essentially UConn'd the Masters. He made one of the toughest things ever look like one of the easiest things ever. So it's kind of funny to me that some people find this kind of dominance and excellence, quote, unsatisfying. Even funnier to me that those people apparently include Scotty Scheffler himself. Check out this line from his post-win presser.
I feel like playing professional golf is an endlessly not satisfying career. For instance, in my head, all I can think about right now is getting home. I'm not thinking about the tournament. I'm not thinking about the green jacket. I'm trying to answer your questions. I'm trying to get home. I wish I could soak this in a little bit more. Maybe I will tonight when I get home, but at the end of the day, I think that's what the human heart does. You always want more, and I think you got to fight those things and focus on what's good.
Cyborg much? But then again, that's what makes the guy so amazing. Like, the guy just won the Masters for the second time and makes it sound like that's the last place he'd ever want to be. Like, that's the one place he does want to be. But again, you got to be like that, I think, to have that kind of success. And get used to that guy being there, because he's going to be there a lot more often. Again, some people want to say that watching this dude play pro golf is also endlessly unsatisfying. But again, I can appreciate the attitude and the energy and watching him dominate the Masters while barely breaking a sweat and then turning around in a presser and essentially shrugging his shoulders and saying, hey, can I go now? Are we good? Are we good? Can I go now? Like, dude reminded me of Joker freaking out after the NBA Finals last year when he found out that he had to stick around for a parade. These dudes just aren't interested in basking in the glory. They thrive on snatching souls, then getting the hell out. They don't want to stand over you after they've knocked you the hell out and bask in that glory. They're just different breeds of cat. Speaking of cat, we saw plenty of cat this weekend. Mates. And we also saw a cat in a place where we have never seen cat before.
We saw a cat, mate.
Well, we saw a cat, mate. We just never saw a cat in last place. DFL. Dead freaking last. Except freaking is not the word that people go with when they talk about DFL. Well, to be fair, DFL of those who made the cut. 60th place, to be exact. So he did make the cut. So technically, he wasn't DFL overall, just DFL among the golfers who made it to the weekend. And to be fair, Tiger was doing aight. He was doing pretty well, sort of, until he got to the weekend, and that's when the wheels fell off. He's just lucky his actual wheel didn't actually fall off, because that right ankle looked like he was holding on for dear life while he was out there. 10 over for Tiger on Saturday. 5 over yesterday, giving him a final 16 over par. 16 over for Tiger at the Masters. That isn't just his worst ever performance at Augusta. That's his worst ever 72-hole score in his entire career. Yet, he was kind of defiant, right? When it was all over, he said, it's a good week. It's a good week. I'm on the right track. My man, whatever works for you. Obviously, I'll tell you what didn't work. Abstaining from wrestling. That didn't help. Remember that New York Post scoop? Well, if that Post scoop is to be believed, refraining from getting nice backfired big time for Tiger. Judging by the results of that little experiment, the dude should have been way more into wrestling over the weekend. My man, you know better than anybody. Sex is undefeated. I can't believe that you, of all people, I have to remind that too. But I did try to warn you last week. I warned you that by the time you hit Amen Corner on Sunday, if you made it to Sunday, if you really did abstain, man, you'd be tweaking and going through withdrawals by the time you hit Amen Corner. Pretty much that's what happened. I mean, I give the guy credit for finishing what he started. I mean, that's the bar right now, right? Never mind being competitive, because no matter what he says, he's not. I mean, he is busted up and fused together, and he did make it through the weekend, so credit for that. However, it was painful to watch the cat limp around the course all weekend long. He couldn't have been more opposite of Scottie Scheffler in that case. Scheffler makes it all look easy and effortless. Tiger makes it all look excruciating. I mean, he looks like he's not even going to make it to the next hole. But, you know me, I look for the positive in everything. Tiger. At least he had an awesome Sunday pairing, because incredibly enough, he was paired with the high amateur, Neil Shipley. Can you imagine a dude who's an Ohio State grad student, who was the only amateur to make the cut? Then he finds himself in a Sunday pairing with the man in red. You want to talk about surreal? And the way Shipley's eyes were darting around, you could tell that he even thought it was kind of surreal. And from the looks of it, though, Tiger enjoyed it. He wouldn't leave the kid alone. He was talking the kid's ear off, and apparently, allegedly, he even passed him a note at one point, which led to an extremely awkward exchange in the presser afterwards. When Shipley was asked about that, he again started looking around and then unequivocally denied that that happened, in a denial that was totally convincing and totally believable.
You know, I saw on one fairway, on a fairway, he wrote something and handed you a note. What was that about? Did you?
No, he didn't.
Oh, I thought he wrote something and handed you a piece of paper.
No, that didn't happen.
Okay.
It didn't? All right. I'll take you at your word, but why are your eyes darting around the room, man? What are you looking for? Man, dude, to be fair, your eyes could not have been shiftier. Thought you handled yourself. You played well. You're in the final grouping. Well, not the final grouping, but a grouping, the early grouping with Tig. You had his back. You respected him. You said the right things until you were asked about that note that he handed you. I mean, who are you looking for, dude? You obviously were looking for help with the answer to that question. Tiger probably shot him that glare like, nah, dude, don't answer that question. Couple things here. I'm going to say, I didn't see it physically, but I'm going to say there absolutely was a note, or my man would not have been looking around the room. And if there was a note, I need to know what that note said. Now, the obvious would just be, I don't know, a phone number. Tiger probably passed it along like, yo, kid, I'm still not getting nice. So you should have this. I have no need for it. Then again, it could have been anything, right? But something tells me it was not a note to remind the kid to wish Vern Lundquist a happy retirement. Something tells me that note was not that wholesome. Whatever the note was. Even if CBS's send-off was incredibly wholesome and heartfelt and the broadcast TV version of nice radio.
Nice radio.
It was proper. It was a very nice send-off for a legend. And the tournament probably, I mean, while bigger than everything else, may not be exactly the same without his voice on that broadcast. So nice to see the icon get the respect he deserves. Which brings me to another icon who did not get the respect that he deserved. The Piano Man. CBS. Man, CBS was amazing to Vern, but they did Billy Joel so dirty last night. I mean, good on them. And man, did they promote the hell out of it or what? All they did was promote it. Good on them to air Billy Joel's 100th show at MSG. However, pretty brutal of them to have that broadcast end like this. And the piano sounds like horrible. And the microphone spells like a beer. And they sit in the... Live from CBS 4, this is your news now. That's real. That's real. We did nothing to edit that. We did nothing to doctor that. Alvy did not do anything to that. It was literally that abrupt. That jarring. Now, I'm not to date myself, because this actually predates me even. That's like some Heidi game material, right? For you really old listeners, you know what I'm talking about. That was the Heidi game right there. That's a real thing. So they set this whole thing up as one of the biggest things ever. CBS is going to broadcast Billy Joel, a.k.a. the Piano Man. And everybody waits all night long for the Piano Man to play the Piano Man. And my man's right in the middle of it with a flourish. And they just ripped the rug. CBS really ran the Piano Man for the 11 o'clock news. All that was missing was the manual buzzer. I mean, if you're going to do that guy like that, do it the right way. Finish it. Drop a manual buzzer on the Piano Man in the middle of the Piano Man. And the piano sounds like horrible. And the microphone spells like a beer. And they sit in the... That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call. I don't like that call. Not a very good call. Live from CBS 4, this is your news now. That's how you do that. That's how you should have done that. I mean, that's incredible. You imagine the stress in the truck. They're like, damn, what are we going to do, man? Come on, dude. Somebody get his playlist and bump up the Piano Man. This thing's going to fall right on the start of the 11 o'clock news. And it did. Come on, man. Come on, man. Scenes of an Italian restaurant. When did that become a 25-minute song? Come on, dude. That'd be like pulling the plug in the middle of Bruce Springsteen doing Born to Run. Or hooking the Beatles in the middle of Let It Be. Like me personally, I hate to be this guy. But since I'm not a huge Billy Joel guy or a Long Island guy, although some of my best friends are from the island, I thought it was hilarious. Way more hilarious than my dude jumping a curb in his car and ending up in somebody's living room. What a day. Let me go back to, and if you're watching that, I'll take your thoughts on that. I mean, can you imagine how pissed he must have been? They did what? They sent him to the local news in the middle of me, the Piano Man, doing the Piano Man? Let me go back to Neil Shipley for a minute. So, this guy's denying emphatically. No. There was no note. There was no note. All right, bro. Clearly, Neil did not want to cross Tig. Even 48-year-old Tig, DFL Tig. I get it. Kind of like deny. What note? What's a note? Tiger. Was there a Tiger on the course? Who's Tiger?
No, he didn't.
Oh, I thought he wrote something and handed you a piece of paper.
No, that didn't happen.
Okay.
Nah. You know what I think? My first guess was that the note must have been, well, a case of, that's private. On the other side, if you say one word of me to the media, you're dead to me, Shipley. And no, clones, I do not think that the note had the number of a waitress at the local diner. That's funny. So is Billy Joel getting hooked in the middle of Piano Man. I don't know, maybe the CBS producer of the concert was the same guy running the 2019 Radio Hall of Fame. Maybe they gave him a specific get-out time. Like, a hard out. Get out. Maybe ahead of time they said, Billy, listen, dude, we know you're a legend and all, and we know it's your 100th show, and you probably have a 100-song playlist, but, dude, we're not even playing. You got to get out. We're going to hit that 11 o'clock news no matter what. Even if you're in the middle of Piano Man, we're going to get the hell out, dude. Probably told Billy's manager, probably told Billy's handlers, probably told the other band members, probably told everybody. And Billy was probably like, hey, man, nobody tells the Piano Man when to stop, especially when the Piano Man is playing the Piano Man. I mean, wake the hell up. This is not just a song. It's an institution. It's a way of life. Do you know who the hell I am? I'm the bleeping Piano Man. Meanwhile, the dude making the decision, you know, the so-called Alvin, the Alvin of the Billy Joel concert was probably like, do I know who the hell you are? Yeah, cool, Billy, I get it. You're the Piano Man playing the Piano Man. Let me ask you something, William. You know who the hell I am? Do you know who the hell the guy in the production truck is with the switch? I'll tell you who that guy is. That's the guy turning your lights out and sending the feed to the local news. Because, Billy, wait for it. Unlike John at the bar, he is not a friend of yours.
Now John at the bar is a friend of mine.
That's not a good call. No.
Dude, not only is he not a friend of yours, he's got a hammer in his hand, and he's not afraid to swing it. Hopefully, when Billy got back to his dressing room and found out what was up, and grabbed his phone and saw that he was trending on X. I just hope that my man did not have a heart attack. He did what? Got a pain in my chest, man. Crazy. Yeah, I know. That's it, Rome. I've had your back for 25 years. How do you do Billy Joel like that? I didn't do Billy Joel in any other way. I'm not the one who hooked him. I'm not the one that sent it to the local news at 11 o'clock. I'm just reacting to what I saw. Don't put that on me, yo. I got nothing against the man, except when he jumps curbs and ends up in unsuspecting living rooms. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and it's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors that satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We are joined right now by Bob Herrig. Bob, it's great to have you on the program. How are you?
It's an honor, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, Bob.
Thank you.
Yeah, me too. Really, really happy to talk to you. Listen, before we talk about the book and Tiger's challenging weekend, let me start with Scottie Scheffler and his dominant performance at the Masters. He became just the fifth Masters champ with multiple wins at Augusta by three or more strokes. What does earning his second green jacket, Bob, and just his fifth Masters represent for the world's number one?
It's just more validation of how great he is. He's been sort of proving that week in, week out for the last year and a half without exactly the victories to show for it. He's won three times now in the last 5 or 6 weeks, which is terrific. But he had gone a year without a win despite sort of dominating his ball striking, his stats, his scoring averages. He has a scoring average last year that was in the realm of what Tiger used to do, historic. But he was struggling with his putting, and he wasn't winning, and so he wasn't getting the accolades. Now he's going to get the accolades. Now we're going to be talking about, can he win the Grand Slam this year? And even though that's crazy, it's maybe not, because the guy's so good, and he's just there. It was almost inevitable that he was going to be there. And then, of course, he watches everybody else sort of fall apart on him.
And Bob Herrick joining us. It's a good point, Bob. Like, when you talk about it, it sounds crazy to mention the Grand Slam. Like, how much separation do you see between him and the rest of golf's marquee names, especially with so many stars now playing in relative obscurity, maybe on the LIV Tour?
The stars are all kind of struggling except for him. I mean, Roy McIlroy, who's number two in the world, wasn't a factor. John Rahm, who won the Masters last year, was way down the list. Colin Morikawa, who played with him in the last group and won two majors, has been struggling most of the year and is actually a little bit of a surprise that he was up there, and then it just didn't work out for him there. You know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas missed the cut. Max Homa had a really good tournament. That was maybe a turning point for him. He's not done very well in the majors. And obviously Ludwig Åberg, playing his first major, that's a huge confidence boost for him. I mean, that guy played in a Ryder Cup before he played in a major championship, which is pretty impressive. And he's got a lot of good to take away from that, even though he wasn't able to get it done. But the rest of the guys that we know just haven't been performing all year, and it just makes you wonder if that divide will get even greater.
Bob Herrick joining us. You know, Max Homa, I was so happy to see him play as well as he did. He faded a bit yesterday, but he did finish in a tie for third, and that was his second straight top 10 result in the major, so I was really happy to see that. Ludwig, who you mentioned, I mean, this dude was at Texas Tech a year ago as an amateur playing in his first major. That was amazing. So when you think about Tiger Woods, you know, you wrote the book that we'll talk about in a moment, but he set a new Masters record on Friday, Bob, with his 24th consecutive made cut, but then he followed that by shooting an 82 on Saturday, his worst round ever at Augusta National, and then finished with his worst 72-hole score in a pro event. Afterwards, Bob, Tiger said the appearance was, quote, a good week. How do you view it? Do you agree with him on that point?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see it as a good week by his usual standards. I mean, Friday and Saturday were sort of the epitome of the last 10 years for Tiger. You know, Friday was gutting it out, playing despite all the things that he's been through. I mean, he shot 72 on a day that was blowing 40-mile-an-hour gusts, and the low score of the day was 69, only one score below 70. He made the cut by 5 shots. I mean, everybody was thinking it was going to be a struggle to make the cut. He was 5 shots inside the number. He beat so many good players, you know, to the weekend. But then Saturday was what he's been going through for so long. And it appeared to me, Tiger never really gives it up, but it appeared to me it was back problems this time. It wasn't so much the leg. He looked like he was walking pretty good, especially for that golf course with all the hills and as strenuous of a walk it is. But he flinched a couple times on shots, and it made you wonder if he was even going to make it. And that's the thing he faces. Like, can he get through 72 holes at this point of his career? He looked really good for 36 holes, and the back flared up on him Saturday. And it appeared that he wasn't quite out of it yesterday as well, that some of those issues were still there. He only made one birdie. That's kind of a sign that he's not all there if he's only able to do that.
Bob Herrick joining us. So, Bob, your new book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods, is essentially a look at his career and viewed through the prism of his historic win at the 2019 Masters. You could have pursued any number of angles with which to write that book. Why did you decide to use that tournament and that time?
I think it's a fun debate, but I think you could argue that that's his best win. Of the 15 majors, obviously he's had some pretty big ones. The first Masters winning by 12, the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines where, you know, he had a shattered ACL and it turned out two fractured tibia in his leg, and he still won in a playoff over Rocco Mediate. And he won the U.S. Open by 15 shots. I mean, those are incredible victories. But in 2019, Tiger wasn't that guy. You know, he was 43. Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Xander Schauffele and Francisco Molinari, who had beat him the year before at the Open. And those guys didn't fear Tiger anymore. They knew the struggles that he had been through. He was 2 years removed from that spinal fusion surgery. And so I thought a deep dive on just what all that went into that win was going to be interesting. And what it revealed was really his whole career has been these sort of driven moments. I mean, Tiger has immense talent, obviously, and incredible skills, but a lot of people have incredible skills and they waste it. You know, they squander it. They don't work at it. And Tiger never did. I have numerous examples in the book of times where he thought he might not have done what he did, but he had a little something extra. I think he has something that most of us don't have, you know, which is a willpower to push on, and he just won't say no or take no. And the cut streak, for example, 142 straight cuts, didn't miss a cut for 7 years. I mean, nobody's halfway to that in his era. You know, it's just something that people look at that and they go, that'll never happen again. People might not even get a third of the way there. It's such a great accomplishment.
So, Bob, that said, is that why he's still out there? I mean, you talk about his drive, but given how difficult it is, how painful it has to be, what is driving him to continue to put in the work and put himself out there? Does he really believe that he could still be competitive and maybe even win one more?
He said it on Tuesday, last Tuesday. He said, if everything goes right, and I think that's probably a good way to look at it, if everything goes right. Because when you put Tiger over the golf ball, when he stands over the ball and hits it, it's still world class. You know, he can hit his irons as good as anybody. He hits his driver out there plenty far. His short game on Friday was incredible. But the problem is you got to walk between shots and you got to do it for 4 days. You really have to do it for more than that. You have to do it in the practice rounds and you have to be preparing for these tournaments. And he's put himself at such a disadvantage because he doesn't give himself, you know, he played 24 holes. He played at Riviera in L.A. That was it, you know, and Scottie Scheffler played 3 tournaments and won 2 of them in the time that Tiger was sitting out. It's hard, and then you throw in his age. But what is his motivation? I mean, you know, there could be some commercial motivations, keeping his name out there. It helps his brand, those sorts of things. But I also don't think Tiger wants to embarrass himself. You know, so I do think he's got this drive to want to try to do it again. I mean, maybe it's just to have another magical moment. It doesn't necessarily mean a win, but, you know, a great performance or a really good result. And the thing that we're not quite sure of is, can he improve? I'm talking about his health. You know, can his leg get better? Can his back get better? Because if he has to keep going through these stops and starts like he's doing, I think that's going to be very difficult.
Right. He made the point that he wanted to play the rest of the majors this year. I find it hard to believe, but, you know, we'll see. He is the author of a brand new book entitled Drive. It's the last legacy of Tiger Woods. It was released on March 26th. He is also a golf writer for Sports Illustrated. He is Bob Herrick. Bob, really appreciate it. Great to have you on the show. Great to talk to you. Bob, thanks so much for that.
Thanks, Jim. Have a great day. I appreciate it.
So, let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order three packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. Not only did UFC 300 live up to the hype Saturday night, it damn near Wembenyama'd it. In other words, exceeded and smashed all the impossible expectations. No joke. I'm going to say top to bottom, that was the greatest card ever assembled in MMA. And it showed up, and it showed the hell out with 13 current or former UFC champions applying fists to one another's faces all night long. But you know who I'm going to start with. Start and end with. The one guy I've been talking about. It's because I know even those of you who are not really into it, you've seen the highlights. You've seen the highlight of all the highlights. The ice job that I'm pretty sure is still trending as we speak.
Ice!
I'm talking about Max Holloway. This dude, and follow me on this before you react. This dude is straight up the new mega superstar in the UFC. And before you diehards come at me with Rome, what do you mean the new megastar? What do you mean the new mega superstar in the UFC? At Blessed MMA has been doing this thing for more than a decade now. Rome, wake up. Yeah, I know. What I'd say to all of you is easy. Pump the brakes on coming at me, bros. Yes, I am well aware of this guy, his resume, what he's accomplished, and what he's all about. I know this. Even before he set foot inside that cage Saturday night, this dude's already a Hall of Famer. One of the greatest featherweights of all time. One of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters in the UFC. No dude has applied more fists to more faces than Max had in his 29 UFC scraps. But again, despite all that, life is different for him today. Way different. Much different. Because even that far into a Hall of Fame career, and he's already in, he's already done enough to get in, Max Holloway is a mega bleeping superstar and a legend. A legend coming in, but even more of a legend coming out. What's bigger than legend? Find me a word to better describe, or that's more significant than legend. more significant than icon. I mean, I'm the wordsmith, and I'm having trouble finding a word to describe it. He was a legend coming in, but he comes out of the cage a whole new level with that ice job. Because I'd have to say, and I mentioned it earlier, I think that's the single greatest moment in UFC history. That knockout of Justin Gaethje, of all people, might have been the single greatest moment in MMA history. Remember, despite being that legend and that icon, literally for weeks, and this is key, literally for weeks, if not months, as great and as respected as Max is, the overwhelming opinion coming in was that this dude was making a mistake. A big mistake. A big mistake in moving up in weight for the BMF title fight against a bad mother bleeper in Justin bleeping Gaethje. I mean, if ever there was a modern day warrior and a guy willing to die for it, I mean, live and die on the sword, right? But if ever there was a guy that epitomized that, it's Justin. A dude who delivers extreme violence in an extremely violent sport in every single fight he has ever been in. I'm going to argue more so than any fighter in the promotion's history. Like the last time out, when he knocked out Dustin Poirier. A dude that Max lost to in his last attempt at 155. This is why so many people are saying, Max, don't do it, dude. Do not do it. This is a big mistake. Max, we know what you're about. You don't need to prove that. This is not a good idea, Max. Don't do it. And Max is like, He didn't listen because he wanted it. This is what separates these guys. This is what separates the uncommon from the uncommon. He wanted to be that guy. He heard it all. And the more he heard it, the more he wanted it. He wanted to become a legend. Kept telling the world as much in the promotion leading up to the fight. Kept saying, gladiators do not go around asking to step on a scale before they fought back in the day. So what I'm talking about is that was an enormous risk he took, but not as big a risk as the one he took at the end of that fight. Big risk, big bleeping reward. That's always been his approach. Again, this dude is uncommon even among the uncommon. Who the hell does what Max Holloway just did? Who the hell, and if you haven't seen it, who motions one of the most dangerous strikers, one of the most violent strikers in the history of the world to the center of the cage to engage in an exchange of all-out haymakers at the end of a fight that Max had already won? He was already ahead on the scorecards. Who does that? Max Holloway, that's who. And in a sport of the ultimate gladiators, I'm not sure how many others are willing to even take that risk. As I mentioned, did you see the reaction of his peers cage side? Other alphas, other champs, other great fighters. They were cage side. They were right there when they saw it happen. I've never seen other alphas look so stunned. And these guys are guys who've seen everything, done everything, been a part of everything. I mean, I love both these guys. I love Holloway. I love Gaethje. But for a minute, Gaethje, and I love this guy, one of my favorite fighters ever, for the reasons I mentioned. For a minute, I thought my dude was dead. I mean, it's one thing to get knocked out, but anytime a guy falls face first onto the canvas, man, that is not a good sign. Again, Holloway had no business engaging Justin late in that fight when the clapper has signified there were only 10 seconds left. Straight up insanity. He'd already won the fight. Not even Justin's corner would argue any differently. 99% of all fighters would have raised their hands up, circled the ring, and not engaged. Not Max. He's not like anybody else. He looked right at the bigger Gaethje, pointed to the center of the ring, then got in there and started firing, trading haymakers. You've all seen it. In case you haven't, it sounded like this.
Holloway shows some mortality. Look at this. Holloway just told him. Stand right here. Oh! Oh, big connection late. Oh! 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 just decide to wing it. And then Max catches him right here. There it is.
Oh.
Just slapped him.
My goodness. Clean as can be. And the accumulation of damage was too much for Gaethje to take. Holy smokes. And this
Holy smokes is right. I mean, that is some goosebump bleep right there. I watched it probably 20 times, and I would have watched it more if I wasn't such a big Gaethje guy. Literally, that's the only way Justin could win that fight. Max was doing him a favor. Like, dude, come here. Come rip a win that I already won, and let's just exchange. But no, he caught Justin with one of the best right hands of all time and created possibly the greatest moment in MMA history. When you consider what he did, instant, mega, super bleeping star when he was already an icon and a Hall of Famer. Dana White said it perfectly afterwards. Dana White is in the business of selling holy bleep moments, and that was the biggest holy bleep moment of all time. Add the fact that he could barely walk, too, because Justin beat the hell out of his legs. And it's even more mind-blowing that he was able to pull that off. And while some of you are coming at Justin because, well, that's what losers do, you're clowning a dude for getting knocked out. Man, you take that crap out of here. I hate that. I hate that. That's a perfect example of having absolutely nothing better in your life to do if you're going to hate on that guy. That dude is a warrior. Max smashed his nose with 1 second left in the first round with a kick. Seriously, it looked like he got hit by a sledgehammer, and he still fought on another 4 rounds. I'm no doctor, but I don't think I need to be a doctor to diagnose that was a destroyed beak. Dude had to then breathe through his mouth for 4 rounds, and he still didn't stop. Man, I couldn't respect this guy any more than I do, Justin. A gladiator who fell on his sword. But as far as Max, though, I'm telling you, man, this dude, how could he at 32 and 30 fights into a UFC career just now be getting started on his new world superstardom? That last 10 seconds, that's how. Because this dude dared to be a legend. And a legend is what he became. And now everybody is in play for this guy. Another run at the featherweight title, like he said he wanted. One at the lightweight strap, and Islam maybe, another fister with Volk. Hell, he said he'd even take another shot at Connor. All these things are wide open now for Max. And speaking of Connor, Dana made it official. Official after UFC 300. Finally, Connor McGregor is going to come back and fight. And he'll be taking on Jim Rome podcast guest 306, Michael Chandler, at UFC 303 on June 29th. Connor, it kind of is a surprise, actually, dude. It's been a while. It's been a while since you fought, and it's been even longer since you won. So it kind of is a surprise. But that'll be his first fight since June of 2021. Man, what a time to be a fight fan. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fix, or a quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. So you've got some of the biggest names in the sport jumping over to the LIV Tour. And as I mentioned, in relative obscurity, like their next event's in Australia. So where do they go? You wonder how long the PGA Tour can exist trying to fund itself and keep their players. Rory apparently has been offered a ton of jack. Never mind that Rory hasn't won a major since 2014. You know, if they're going to keep poaching, and it's not like they're going to run out of money ever, but the PGA Tour could. It's true, man. And what happened to the merger? The merger was supposed to be done already, and it's not. So where does that stand? Dear Billy, you had it coming. Nobody, and I mean nobody, calls it a tonic and gin. Signed, any bartender anywhere. Brendan Rockville, well done.
Making love to his tonic and gin.
Quote, you had it coming. Nobody, and I mean nobody anywhere, calls it a tonic and gin. That's so true. Can you imagine? I never even thought about that. Because I really haven't given that guy much thought. Can you imagine rolling up to a bar and looking at a bartender and say, yo, man, I'll have a tonic and gin. That's a reason to go, right? I'll have a tonic and gin. I'll have a Coke and rum. That's incredible. And being a former gin man myself, I can't believe that I never thought about that. I guess probably because I never really thought about that song. A tonic and gin. Wow, man. Makes me hungry.
Making love to his tonic and
I think I'm going to make love to my jelly and peanut butter. Dude, not only did he ask for a tonic and gin, but he's getting nice with his tonic and gin.
Next to me,
like he's making love to his tonic and gin. I mean, how much is wrong with that one lyric? I agree with Brendan. Dude, you had that coming to you. Getting nice with your tonic and gin. Look at Parody Larry. Check him out. Hey, Rome. I felt right at home when CBS ran Billy Joel during Piano Man for the news. If anybody could relate, Larry, it's you. If anybody could relate, it's you. All right, next topic. Phone lines are open, 1-800-636-8686. I got a shout out to my pals in Kentucky. Yo, BBN. BBN, you're something else. What a difference a few days makes, right? Last time I shouted you out, so many of you were mid-meltdown over the Mark Pope hire. And I was trying to tell you to reconsider, be reasonable, keep an open mind, and embrace one of your own and focus on all the good things that Pope brings rather than what he might lack in his resume points. I understand the resume is not the same kind of resume that the other guys that Mitch Barnhart was trying to run down. However, it doesn't mean it's not a good hire. However, it doesn't mean he doesn't have a lot to bring to it. Well, apparently, y'all were listening to me on Friday because dang, did the BBN's tune change quickly. And look, I understand why you're upset. The BBN being furious at how that coaching search went down was not surprising, nor was it hard to understand. The BBN and Kentucky did not run Cal off to get Mutombo'd by the coaches at Alabama and Baylor before falling back on the BYU coach. I guarantee the thinking internally wasn't, you know what? We probably have no shot at the Bama head coach. We probably have even less of a shot at the Baylor coach. But you know what? Let's take those big swings. Because if worse comes to worse, we'll still get the BYU coach. Yeah, I don't think that was the thinking. You don't run a guy because he doesn't win enough tournament games for a guy who has never won a single tournament game. That's not what the BBN was thinking when they got their pitchforks and torches out and chased Cal and his dog Paul and the dog stroller out of Las Vegas. So I understand why it took you a minute to get your head wrapped around that hire of Mark Pope. I understand why it took you a second to process Mark Pope and why it took them a minute to come around to the idea. My point was Mark Pope is actually pretty promising for a lot of different reasons, even if he wasn't your first choice or second choice or ideal candidate. Did anybody had mine 2 weeks ago? BBN, I know you. I know what you're about. I know you thought that when you ran Cal off, you could get anybody. I know you thought that. I knew you thought that you could get Dan Hurley. I knew you thought that you could get the Munster kid. I know you knew you could get Nate Oates. Or Drew. But there's still a lot to like about this dude. Top thing being, he is one of you. He understands what it is to be one of you. And damn, did he hammer that point home at that intro presser in Las Vegas yesterday. I was all the way out here in SoCal watching on TV, so I can't know for sure, but the vibes looked epic. I mean, outrageously epic in Rupp Arena yesterday. I've been in that building, but I've never experienced that. And that wasn't even for a game. I've been in that building for games, but I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that. When he pulled up in that bus and the 96 championship squad rolled out of that bus with Pope bringing up the rear, holding the hardware, man, that was legendary. That was all-time intro presser gold. There is winning your opening presser, and then there's that. Whoever came up with that was a genius. And I know, winning the intro presser is going to be long forgotten if dude can't win in March. But the thing is, being able to take that Rupp Arena stage and put on a show like he did and get the BBN whipped into that kind of mouth-foaming frenzy, that's also part of the gig. And that's not an easy part of the gig. And that can be pretty intimidating. But then again, he's been in that building. He's run the floor in that building. He won hardware in that building. He won a natty in that building. He played for Rick Pitino in that building. He knows. You need to be able to harness the energy and the power of the BBN if you're going to effectively lead the BBN. Because you don't want the BBN turning on you. Ask Cal. Ask Billy Gillespie. Now, you got to be able to direct that tidal wave of passion. And I get, it's just one day, not even a game. But you know what? You got to win that one day. You have to dominate that one day. And he went out there and he did that. Most of all, he showed Lexington, reminded Lex Vegas. He knows what time it is. He knows what he's up against. He knows what he's done and what he hasn't done. And he knows what he has to do. He knows the assignment. You get that gig. You have to lead the BBN and you have to win. And not just win, but you need to win big. You need to win natties. You need to win championships. You need to hang banners. It's an assignment probably unlike any other in college sports, which is why it takes somebody who gets it. And getting it and executing on it are two different things, but my man gets it. And you don't even take that from me. Take it from him. Does this sound like somebody who does not understand what he signed up for?
Every coach in America, at every other job in America, stands up at their press conference and they try and moderate expectations. We don't do that here at Kentucky. I understand the assignment. We are here to win banners.
Hey, like I said, that's what you have to say. Now you got to go out and you back, got to back it up. The job is way bigger than just saying and doing all the right things on day one, obviously. But my dude, Mark Pope, and you know he's a jungle guy. We've had him on always. Always loved talking to him when he was at BYU. But he did and said all the right things on day one. And I just want to give you a shout out, BBN, for showing the kind of love and passion and energy. Even if you were initially disappointed, you got a hold of yourselves and you understood we got to rally around this guy because he is one of our own. He's one of our own. This is our guy. We got to let him know. All right. Let's see what you got, big fella. Not that you had a choice. But then again, you also didn't pack the arena for a press conference. You didn't have to do that. There are reports that they're expecting, I don't know, maybe 6,000, maybe 8,000. That place was packed, and they were lined up all day long to get in. Some never did get in. There were people who were posting on X about getting the chills and crying, watching the 96 team get off that bus. The whole scene was incredible. The whole scene was the best of the BBN. Now, we've seen the worst of the BBN. It can get gnarly. But this is what I mean. We saw the worst of the BBN. When you ran Cal off, And then we saw the best of the BBN 10 minutes later when you welcome Mark Pope in, a guy that you allegedly didn't want. What a month, man. You talk about a roller coaster ride. But, man, I don't know too many college basketball fan bases that can show up and show out like the BBN did. Now, it's true. One of Cal's five stars, Boogie Fland. And by the way, an amazing name right there. He decommitted from Kentucky this morning and is going to reopen his recruitment. Not the best news. But not surprising, right? How many of these players came to Kentucky to play for Cal? I mean, some of them to play for Cal, not even Kentucky, but to play for Cal because they know that Cal was an immediate pipeline to the association. I'm going to put myself out there and say it would be pretty surprising if Pope actually managed to keep any of those dudes that Cal signed. And if he can, great. Nobody said it was going to be easy for Mark Pope. He's going to have to rebuild a roster that works for his offense and his style and his vibe, and it might take a minute. And it might not be a straight line to success, but he knows what he signed up for. He understands the BBN, and he's going to attack this thing as hard as he possibly can. And that's what I was saying from the very beginning. You bring an outsider in, they don't understand. There's no way you could possibly understand the BBN until you've lived with the BBN. This guy has. 300 and wore Max Holloway. Dude, if you're not capping, if that's true, man, that is a great father-son weekend. That's something you never forget. That's something he'll never forget. That's something you'll never forget. All right, let's go to the phones. Use them. They're wide open. 1-800-636-8686. First stop today, we go to Phoenix. Tony, what's going on, Tony? How are you?
Rome, I've been waiting 20 years to say this. I met you in Vegas, dog. You came up to me. You said, what's up? It was one of the greatest moments of my life. So thanks for the vine. Now that I got that out of the way. First thing, Tiger, watching him pace out on that course was incredible. Was that Tiger's wood leg? I couldn't believe it, bro. I'll tell you what. I didn't watch any other golfer all week. And it doesn't sound like I missed anything anyways. It was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen a guy lose at. Second, Max Holloway. That was probably the best, if not the best, knockout. The only one I could compare it to is Ben Askren getting knocked out by Masvidal in about just the amount of time. I know I'm running here, Rome. Last thing, a triple U because it's not a beef day. Guys that get their hat too big and tuck their ears in, stop that, bro. You look whack. War, you, Rome, and this being the first call on the Infinity Sports Network. Peace.
My man, Tony, how did you get up and down? My man got that plane up and down. I mean, admit it. When he first got on, you're like, this is going to end badly. My man's going to take this right into the side of the mountain. My man's going to run that plane right into the side of the mountain. Not at all, dude. Perfect landing, Tony.